Hey there, listeners. Welcome to another wonderful episode of the Leadership is Changing podcast. My name is Dennis Giannoutsos and I'm your host. Hey, I had a great interview with a gentleman by the name of Richard Wileman, and he was orphaned at the age of six, and Richard lived in 19 foster homes and attended 11 different schools. Now, rather than becoming a victim to those circumstances, he overcame them and became a remarkable business success. Now, Richard's a great guy. We've had a great conversation. He's also the author of a new book coming out. He's also got a couple other books, but he's also got his new book coming out called 100 Proven Ways to Acquire and Keep Clients for Life. Now, this episode is actually called Show Them the Steps, and he talked about that quite a bit, actually. And also, we discussed how leaders actually work across different generations, build relationships, but also connect with people. The things that he said was the experience and the outcome. Amazing to work with these words that he shared as well. Hey, fantastic interview. Sit back and enjoy.
Welcome to Leadership is Changing. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change. This is taking your leadership to another level by finding the balance between executive excellence and personal well-being through stories that inspire real change. It's time to adapt in our fast-moving world when leadership is changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsos.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome to another wonderful episode of the Leadership is Changing podcast. Great to be here with you. And also, I have a great guest with me. His name is Richard Wileman. And Richard, a massive welcome to you.
Well, thank you so much. It's a blessing to be with you today, Dennis. Really excited about this opportunity to be on the Leadership is Changing podcast.
Excellent. Thank you. Now, whereabouts in the world are you today?
Today, I'm in my home in Sarasota, Florida. And sometimes I'm closer to you. I have a home in Hawaii as well. So closer to you in New Zealand. But today I'm traveling and speaking a great deal. So I'm in my home in Sarasota, Florida.
So you speak a lot around in the Americas or around the world. Whereabouts do you tend to go?
Well, I've spoken all over the world. I think 40 some countries and four continents. I think that's right. You kind of lose track after a while. But I speak at conferences. I've been on the road for the last 2 weeks. I actually got in late last night from Milwaukee. Yep. But no, it's a real privilege of the platform. Thank you.
Yeah, cool. And what do you speak on? What kind of topics?
Well, specifically, areas that I really am focused on and bring knowledge about is on how to market your services effectively, how to brand yourself effectively, how to really acquire and keep households for life, customers for life. How do you really acquire them and how do you really keep them? So you got the branding component, you got the marketing component, you got the acquisition component, the retention component. So those are the areas I speak on that side. Then I do quite a bit of speaking on leadership and recruiting quality people. How does a leader interface with the generations? Well, I've done a massive generational study because in most, not all, Dennis, but most companies have three to four, some even have five, frankly, different generations that a leader is leading. So, well, good luck with that. If you don't have a clear understanding of, shall we say, the nuances of each generation. And it's not that they're completely different. It's just that from a leadership style and the way you communicate, you need to connect with these people. So I do quite a bit of speaking on the generational differences and how can you lead a team of multiple generations into the future.
Wow. And it sounds like you share a wealth of knowledge with them as well. What has been your background before you getting into speaking? What else have you done?
Oh, wonderful question. Well, just really briefly, my parents died when I was young. My mother died when I was five. My dad died when I was six. And I lived in 19 foster homes. So that was great training because you really learned how to interact with people. My first sales job was selling cookware door to door. And the guy said, now the disadvantage of this job is you're going to have to go to strangers' houses. I'm like, I've been living with them my whole life. What's the problem? So it worked out fairly well for me. So, but that really began my journey. I sold cookware, Encyclopedia, cemetery plots, family Bibles. I worked for Xerox Corporation, went to work in their copy center and got seven promotions in 2 years. It was just, I think, the background of interfacing and living all those foster homes, you really learned how to connect and build relationships with people. And then I was a general sales manager for Rolls-Royce and built the third largest Rolls-Royce dealership network in the United States. And then I retired from that, and then I had sales, and a friend of mine was starting a magazine called The Rob Report, and he wanted me to take over sales and marketing, which I did. And then we had our liquidity event, and that was a wonderful ride. And then people began to call me and said, would you come and speak on how to market to affluent people? You took a magazine nobody ever heard of and turned it into an award-winning magazine. You sold all these Rolls Royces. And this is the days before the internet. And I was like, sure. So I said, I'll speak at a conference. So I spoke at a conference in San Diego, and I had 22 CEOs come up at the end and said, you've got to help us with our plan. So that's how it all started. And that's almost 30 years ago, and been very blessed ever since. And, you know, I've written 124 video textbook programs. I've written 3 books, 2 international bestsellers. And my next one, as you know, is coming out very soon.
Yeah. We'll talk about that book in a second. The other thing I was going to ask you as well is, say, encyclopedias, which one? Was that Britannica that you were selling?
Yeah. Oh, door to door. Yeah.
You know,
encyclopedias. Cemetery Flats, too. That was really good. And I found out you can't sell anything on the doorstep, but if you can get in that, well, other than cemetery plots, you can't demonstrate that. But it's just like in leadership, people love to talk us straight. Let me tell you about it. Well, what I found out is, if you're going to lead people, and I had a huge team when I was in the cookware business, and I sold insulation door to door, too, which is a real hot topic, attic insulation. But I had a huge team. And what I learned was, you could talk us straight all you want, but if you demonstrate it, now people could follow you. And that was a fundamental tenet that I learned very early on, that I could tell somebody, here's how to do it. But if I went out and showed them and demonstrated, they'd not only catch on immediately, but they'd say, I can follow this direction. And, you know, subliminally saying, I can follow this individual. I wasn't thinking like that, but I came to realize, people would ask me, how do you get all these people out selling insulation at night after they've taught school all day or they've worked as a mechanic? And I'm like, I don't know. I just show them what to do and they want to follow along. And that really became the driver.
Yeah. And I think that's a big thing here that Rich is just sharing, listeners, is the fact that you need to understand that as a leader, we need to show people, not just bark orders or point and go and do something, show them, demonstrate it, and then do it really well. And right. I think that's a huge insight just there. Now, the other thing you mentioned as well is Xerox. So you're selling printers and things like that. I led a team here in New Zealand that we had one of the first laser printers from Xerox here, printing speed camera tickets, bank statements, and all that stuff as well. And it was really quite cool and thoroughly enjoyed doing that. But I think you've also hit on another thing too, that you can knock on anybody's door. Like a leader, you can knock on anybody's door to attract the talent or bring the talent. But if you don't sit down with them and build relationships and understand what they need, they aren't going to buy. They aren't going to join the organization. Did you find that you sold more in lounges with people or at their kitchen table?
Oh, kitchen tables for sure. Yeah. And not just when you sell cookware, which is somewhat obvious if you hit the kitchen table, but even selling insulation. In fact, they had a sales team and they were struggling in this company that sold insulation. And they asked me, they called me and said, would you come up and try to help us figure it out? And so I said, show me the presentation. Well, I mean, it was so complicated. I was like, well, we need a 1 sheet of paper with a roof on it and 2 sides. And then what I did is I laid out, here's how you present so people can see it, and then show them the steps they need to take to get their house insulated. And this was a little company going along. Their top salesperson was selling 24 houses a month. 2 months after I built that program and put it in for them, their top salespeople were doing 105 houses a month.
Awesome.
And because they could sit down at the kitchen, to your point, to the kitchen table, and they could demonstrate. Now, here's what I did to teach them. I rented schools. This was in Ontario, Canada. I rented schools on Saturdays because they have what? Cafeterias. So I'd have one salesperson sit on one side of the cafeteria table and the other on the other side, one be the homeowner, one be the presenter. And they would use this drawing that I gave them to illustrate what would happen if they put insulation in. So they would go back and forth. And because they had to go up to doors and knock on doors, you know, the CEO said, well, you know, the problem is they don't know how to step up the doors. We don't. I said, get me a school. We'll rent a school. So we rented schools because they have a lot of doors, classroom doors. So I showed them, you step up to the door. When you knock on the door and they open the door, you step back so people can open the door. It removes the barrier. And then you have an opportunity to build a cover. How long? Not, I'm with the insulation. How long have you lived in the area? Oh, we've been here for 5 years. Terrific. Then you realize how cold the winters are here, right? Oh my God, they're up. And immediately you got rapport. And before you know it, they're opening up the attic and we're measuring up the house.
Nice.
But it all started with, you got to train people to show up. So I rented schools because they had a lot of classroom doors, and I'd have teams and they'd go and practice, and they'd sit at the tables and practice the demonstration.
Richard, something you just said before, why do people make it complicated?
Well, I think they think it's all about the product and the platform and the process and the procedure and the plan. And, you know, salespeople and companies and CEOs are in love with the product and the platform and the plan and the process. But the truth of the matter is, the truth is the consumer's in love with only two things, the experience and the outcome. That's it. So we tend to want to talk all about our platform and our process and procedures. We make it very complicated. And instead of talking about the outcome people can achieve and very much give them a very positive, uplifting experience.
Yeah, and I think that's also the same for leadership, right? I mean, people wanting that outcome and that experience, and they want to come to work and they want to have a great experience working for a leader that's a great person who's got a lot of energy. No one wants to work for, and here it comes, Richard, this is what I normally say, a knuckle dragger, somebody who's just down in the dumps and just dragging their knuckles across the ground. They're not interested.
Well, that's right. We have a large coaching division, as you know, and I had a call today with a senior VP, and he said, I want some of the managers on so they can listen on these coaching calls, and then they can talk to these people after the coaching calls. And my question was, a talk group about what? Well, what they need to be saying differently on those calls. We don't need to here. The challenge is that people have gone to school for management. Well, I look at management, I flip the word around. Management oftentimes means we're going to age the man or age the woman, because you manage them and you micro, and you don't want to, and people today say they don't do it. But what people want today is a leader that has a vision, that's pragmatic, that is willing to have four characteristics demonstrated, just like buyers do. They want somebody that's kind, somebody that's thoughtful, somebody that cares enough to find out about them as an individual and know their name and be empathetic to their situation. If those four things are prevalent in a leader, they're prevalent in the people. And the prevalent in the people, guess what? People will buy from those people because they're kind and thoughtful and empathetic. And people respond to that. They see that. On the other hand, if a leader does not set a culture in place of kindness and thoughtfulness and caring and empathy, then the people are all about themselves. And when the people are all about themselves, the net result is they're not taking care of the customer base.
Totally. I love that. That is awesome. And you're coming with a book. And is that kind of material in the book as well?
The answer is yes. The title is 100 Proven Ways to Acquire and Keep Clients for Life.
Awesome.
And it's literally 100 proven. I wrote till I was done and we counted it was 100. I was astonished. But in any case, everyone is, here's all based on consumer research and employee research. What do people really want? And so as a result of that, I talk about here's what to do. Here's why it's important. Here's an antidote that reinforces the value of it. And here's the outcome that you'll achieve on throughout the book. So there's 100 proven ways there. It comes out in March and it's already in its second printing. Companies, they've had almost 2,000 bulk orders just from companies who want to put this in the hands of their people so they can be more thoughtful, kind, caring, and empathetic with their customers.
Excellent. So listeners, look out for that in the show notes. We'll put the link in there for the book as well, which would be great. And so it's really good. Now, Richard, how did you actually get into leadership yourself?
Well, it was so bit by accident. I was in direct sales and then we had a leader there. So I got involved there and he said, you know, you got some new people, and, you know, you're doing very well here. Would you take him under your wing and kind of show him the ropes? And I found I liked it very much. And then I would say, okay, they're ready to go. And they said, no, we want to work with you. We don't want to work for some of the sales manager. And I'm like, well, no, I'm just the trainer here. And I'm just showing you how I do it. So that's how I ended up building an organization. And then, of course, as I got involved in Xerox, and sort of the same thing happened. I wrote a program for them. It's very complicated. We won't spend time on it. But suffice to say, it was for billing. And the company was so impressed, they wanted me to help them with their billing department. And as it turned out, I ended up in about 6 months. They gave me 35 billing agents that you just work with these people. You somehow know how to show them the steps. But you see, that was the key. Show them the steps. And that was the key. And so I call it sort of a God-given talent. The gift, I guess, that I have is twofold. One is discernment. I can sort of see it, but I can see the customer's perspective. And it's an odd thing to say, but I do a lot of consulting where they'll bring me in and say, here's our situation. And I'll just sometimes say, well, have you thought about this? And they'll go, oh my God, we never even thought about that. And it's not me. It's just a gift that I have. That's all. But that's how I got into leadership is I realized it's just like the customer. If you think about it, Dennis, you know, why don't people make decisions? Because 90% of the time salesperson's like, well, what do you think? What do you think? As opposed to, here's the next steps like we're going to take to get you into this car that you're looking for. Here's the next steps we're going to be able to get the mortgage you deserve. Here's the next steps we're going to take to replace all these copiers in this building so you get back to efficiency. Here's the next steps we're going to take to upgrade your telecommunications so that you can save money, be more efficient, and most importantly, get some of your time back because that's your greatest currency. That's the difference.
It is the difference, and it's those key whereby you, if you can show people those steps and help them understand how to do that, you're on a winner. It's going to be massive results for everybody. And for the
customer. As a leader, as a salesperson, and the customer wants it.
Yep.
I mean, I interviewed hundreds of people in this book, and they said, why didn't you make, well, you know, the seller, he was a nice guy. She was really good, but, you know, it was just confusing to us what the next steps were. Well, you know, you can't lose weight. You can't get married, well, hopefully, but you can't do a lot of things unless you at least take the first step. So if we get, and it's the same, a leader has to give people steps. You can stand on the stage and say, we're going to be the biggest, boldest, brightest, bestness ever. But, you know, like Ritz Carlton work we do, they have a gather room every morning and the staff comes together because we talk about what we're going to do. Here's the guest in-house. What we're going to do to elevate that experience. Here it comes. Here's the steps we're going to take today.
Yeah. So it's all in the steps and that's really good. Next time I'm out running and walking and I'm up my steps in the hills, I'm going to think of you, which would be good. Yeah. Hey, look, this person could be alive or from history. Based on your experience and life and working in business and so forth, who's been your favorite leader and why?
Oh, instantly easy. Churchill, instantly. No thought given.
Mm-hmm.
I have been I don't even know if the word fan. I have been a student, I think it would be the better word, of Winston Churchill. Why? Because he was very inspirational. I think we'd all have to agree with that. He was certainly pragmatic. He was not influenced by others who had opposing views of that which it is they felt were principled views he had, like Chamberlain as an example. We need to surrender, basically. And, you know, he stood in the gap. And that's what leaders have to do. They have to stand in the gap. When the wheels are coming off on both sides of the wagon, somebody has to stand in the gap and right the ship. And that's what a leader does. And that's what is needed today. So that's why I like church. I've been to his home many times in England. I have clients in England, of course, so I go back and forth. And it's such a wonderful experience. And my hope is this next summer, they have a series at Oxford and they keep inviting me. It's just my schedule is a little crazy, but they do a summer course on Churchill. And I know people there and they know that I'm an enormous fan of Churchill, but that's my short answer. My easy answer. I've always been a real fan of Churchill.
Yeah.
He was grumpy. He smoked cigars, but he was absolutely, I don't think we'd have the free world we have today. Yes, he made other mistakes and other parts of the world. We all know that. But as far as a true leader, he clearly led.
I think of all the episodes and all the interviews I do, and I actually talk and ask that question, probably the two major ones would be Nelson Mandela and Winston Churchill are the two that keep coming up. Yeah. There are others very close in the number of times, but I just...
Well, I relate to Mandela for this reason. You know, I lived in 19 foster homes, and people say to me all the time, oh, Richard must have been out. Well, you're either going to have a victor, either going to be a victim, or you're going to have a vision for what you want to accomplish. And the thing I always related to, I've read a lot of things about and by Mandela. And the thing that always struck me is that he never became a victim. He always had a vision for where he wanted to go. And I'll never forget the soccer match where they all united in South Africa. So I'm not surprised he's on the list. He's been a great inspiration just because he was a man of vision and he never became a victim, nor did he engage in a vendetta.
I think you're talking about rather than a soccer match, a rugby match.
As a Zealander, you would know soccer or here it's football and people are like, why do you wear a helmet? But yeah. Anyhow.
Yes, I know. And so that then the film Invictus came out as a result of that game. And South Africa were playing New Zealand in the final and we lost to South Africa. So it's a very touchy subject, that one. But a fantastic film. I love it. And I think it's some great messaging as well. Now, if you had the chance to sit on a park bench having a cup of coffee with Winston Churchill, would there be one question that Richard would love to ask Winston Churchill? What would it be?
I think it would be, where did he find the courage to never, ever give up? Because that courage that he demonstrated in his, well, many times, but in one particular broadcast, encouraged the English people that they too could be victors and not victims. And I would like to, I mean, I understand the inherent quality of courage. I was at a secret SAC base years ago. I was asked to go speak to the commanding all the officers there. And they have a big sign that hangs in the hangar. I can't even tell you where it is, but suffice to say, in the world. And they have a big sign that says, courage is seeing the goal of victory in the presence of defeat. We will win. And that's exactly what I think of Churchill. And so I'd like to ask him where he got it, where he got that level of, given his background too. I mean, let's be crystal clear. His background, his historical perspective was quite odd and all the things that he had done previously. So that'd be my question. How did that rise up so that he inspired, frankly, an entire nation?
Yeah. Wow. That is very powerful, that whole, what you just shared there as well. Now, the show here is called Leadership is Changing. When I say that title or that statement, what does it mean for you?
Well, you managed, you know, micro. We talked a little bit about micromanaging, you know, commanding people and ordering people around. I think what we're really seeing today is that you got to think about all these generations we're dealing with. I mentioned earlier, if you got a Gen Z or X, I mean, if you think you're going to order these people around, well, good luck with that. The reality is they want to be shown. So what's really shifted in the baby, even the baby, we'll go up to baby boomers and come backwards. What's happened that's really changed is people today, they don't want to be told what to do. They want to be shown what to do, number one. Number two, they want collaborative leaders. Somebody that asks, what do you think? Why do you think? How do you think? And so, and I'm working with a group right now at a major insurer that has put together a group that's going to write a prospectus on a massive change. I mean, this will be a sea change in the company. But the leader is an executive vice president. He's put together a team of people in the field to work on this prospectus. So people support that, which it is that they build. That's another big change in, shall we say, leadership that we see. So the reality is that in today, people want guidance, they want mentoring, they want steps, and they want a vision. So we got to stop managing. We got to start collaborating. We got to start showing people what to do, not just telling them. They want to be inspired. They want guidance and mentoring and step. And the whole thing sits under the vision. Everybody talks about vision, and most people get it all wrong. They write you three paragraphs. Vision's real simple. It's who do you want to be known for, and what do you want to be known for by whom? And that's it. And I mean, you think of Bezos. I mean, when Jeff wrote his vision statement, I want to be the most customer-centric company in the world. I don't know what part of that is confusing. But I've had companies send me their vision statement. It's like, no, I need the vision statement. Well, it's four paragraphs. This is the vision statement. This is a mission statement all rolled into one pile of non-clarity. So today, the big change is that people want to know where we're going. And are you going to work alongside me, collaborating with me to get me from where I am to where we're going to go?
Yeah. And people do want it to be simple. They want to be simple, but also relatable. In other words, they understand it and they get it. And I think
I want to connect. I want to understand it. Yep. I want to see it. I want to be able to see the future.
And I think that's the same thing for you as a speaker on stage, but it's also for a leader who's speaking or presenting. It's that connecting. If they can connect with that audience, or when you're selling, as you said before, that's where it's really going to come together nicely as well. And I think the other piece you just said about mentoring, a lot of leaders say to me, oh, these generations, they want this and that, and they're leaving. And I go, yeah, you need to go and do one thing. And they go, what? Look in the mirror. Look in that mirror and ask yourself, because they want you to mentor them and they want strong leadership. If they see a weak leader and there's no mentorship, there's no vision, that's simple, they're off. They vote with their feet, and they vote with their feet big time. Yeah. So it's a shame. But some leaders need to adapt to be able to go through those different things as well.
Well, that's not the way we've done it. We haven't done it that way here for a year. We never done it that way. I hear it a lot. And, people like to criticize those people, but what they really need to realize is that these leaders need to understand their generational differences. And some people want to collaborate. Some people want to be on teams. Some people want to work individually, but they all want to know where we're going and how we're going to get there. And yes, it takes different motives. I'll give you one quick example. Some sales organizations, well, the way we get prospects is we use the telephone and we email. Well, that's great, but these last two generations in the workforce, they're not, number one, some of them are comfortable even making a phone call. They'd rather text, quite frankly. And secondly, email, I don't know how many you get, but I'm sure it's plenty. So it becomes difficult. So how do you get these people to be successful? You've got to segment your marketplace and put people in market segments and target markets, as I call it, or verticals. If you're selling a product that's good for five or six different industries, put a sales team in each of those industries so they can speak the language, build a relationship, make the connections, become known as the go-to team for that organization. The new people will immediately say, well, I don't know. I'm good at building relationships. Well, if we can get new people to go out there and build relationships and bring in business at trade shows and going to meetings and networking effectively and going from meeting people to meeting with people, it's a runaway train.
Yep, absolutely. I love that analogy, the runaway train. Great. Hey, you and I are living in a world where it seems to be getting faster. Technology, look, we're using technology today to talk to each other on each other's side of the world. Technology, data, business, and so forth is driving a lot of it. You may have already alluded to some of this already, but what makes a leader successful in today's fast-paced, ever-changing world?
Well, I think one is they have to be nimble. And what I mean by nimble is you have to be willing to say, this worked last year, but this year we need to reset. And I'll tell you what's really going on in the world. And that's why I wrote this book. Employees are doing this too. We went through, you know, went through the great pandemic, and then we went through the great resignation. Everybody's quitting their jobs and goes away. I'll tell you what we're doing now. We're going through the great reevaluation. Am I with the right provider, with the right company, with the right salesperson, with the right doctor, right dentist, right cleaner, right restaurant? You name it. And so what has to happen as leaders, we need to realize we need to get involved in the great re-engagement, not just with the customer, but with our employees. I mean, I work with a lot of CEOs and a lot of executives, and I always tell them, they'll say, well, I've got this guy. He's never going anywhere. I said, do you know how many people have left a firm and gone somewhere else because somebody told me they were never going to leave? You need to rehire these people every 6 months. Well, what do you mean by that? Put them through HR? No, take the guy out to lunch and ask her, what are three things we can do to elevate our relationship? What are three things we can do to strengthen your bond to the company? What are three things we can do to make your job more effective? What are three things? Build a relationship. Don't say, how's it going? What's up? That means nothing to people. They want to be able to share their experience. And of course, the younger generations are adamant you do that, or they will leave. So the real message here, I think, from a leadership perspective, is just like the customer is going through this great reevaluation, so are employees. Am I in the right place? Am I being treated correctly, et cetera? Now, I will tell you this, the executive vice president that put together this grouping, I've talked to the next person on the list, and this woman is a director and works in a branch office. But I am telling you, you're talking about loyal. She said, I just can't believe they've asked me. This is so great that I'm going to be part of this initiative, that they really care about what I think. Well, she's not going anywhere anytime soon because people support that which it is that they build. So what we want to do, we want to engage the generation. So as leaders, question, as leaders, what we have to do is re-engage with people that we have on our team and re-engage with individuals that are in the marketplace. And that's why I wrote the book, because I talked to people and they were like, I feel taken for granted. I feel like I'm a transaction. I feel like I'm an account. I feel like I'm a number. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Money's emotional. Business is emotional. There's a connection here. Relationships drive revenue. So I think what I'll do is start recording and writing down all the ways I see that people that are really good relationship builders are building connections with people. And when I get enough of them, I'm going to write a book. So that's how it happened.
That's great. And then, wow, the great reevaluation with the great engagement. Yeah.
And the great reengagement is the answer to growth going forward. If you got a vision and you reengage with your customers and reengage with your team, there's no stopping you.
And I think probably what's underlying all of that was the key word you said earlier on, which was experience. You provide experience to everybody, and then there where it goes. Yeah. Now, you may have just alluded to this, but the next question is, because you and I have been talking about it from a leader's perspective, but if we change lens now and think about employees, their expectations of leaders, has that changed?
Yeah, that people are, what would I say? Well, let me tell you what people are not. People think that employees are very judgmental and they don't want to work extra hours and they don't want to, I hear it all the time. They don't want to do this, they don't want to do that, they don't. Well, what's happened with the employee is that they want to work on purpose, not pressure. So if the purpose isn't clear, I'm out of here at 5 o'clock. If the purpose isn't clear, I'm just going to do enough to get by. If the purpose isn't clear, I'm going to spend a lot of time on my phone while I'm supposed to be working. But if you got people working on purpose, that's a whole new ballgame. Because people get behind, and we all do. We get behind purpose and we go. It's just like a sports team. If they're working on purpose, they're going to win. And they don't go to, you know, two teams show up in the field. One hopes not to lose. The other is going to win. Well, the one that wants to win is the one that's going to win almost every time. I mean, it's just human nature. So what's changed with the employees? They want a sense of purpose. Why am I here? Why here? Now, if you build collegiality and you build, and I hate this phrase, client-centric culture, I mean, stop. You know, customers are on a journey. They are. I don't want them on a journey. I want them to come to my place and stop. This is the last stop. There's no journey left. We're done. Thank you. But this gets thrown around by people who are, anyway, you know what I'm saying. So the reality is that it's the same with employees. Employees are like, why am I here? Am I making a difference? Am I making a life? The younger generation wants to make an impact in the community. They want to be known for something. They want to make a difference in something. And that's what sets them apart today from before. Before, people showed up for a job, for job security. People today show up for emotional security. That's the difference.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome. Very good.
Wow.
I'm like, I've just taken so many notes. Where do you see leadership being in 5 years?
Well, I think we're going to see organizations become more flat. Not that they're not flat now, but there's a yin and a yang here. Companies are trying to cut costs. So what are they doing? They're giving more, let's call it leaders, managers, more control. What that normally means is I want to take it from 7 reports to 13 reports, and we can shave somebody out of the organization. That span of reporting, of leadership, it gets awfully wide, and it's almost impossible for an individual to run an organization of that size effectively and efficiently. I'm not saying they can't do it. It's difficult. But if you look at some of the CEOs I work with, some of the biggest companies in the world, why do they have executive vice presidents? Well, they got 7 executive vice presidents because that's all they can really manage is those 7 people will lead those 7 people. They made the organization, but they need those individuals to lead their orgs. So I think what we're going to see is a flattening of that. And what I mean by that is we're going to see more people running teams. Like a pod of 6 or 7 people are going to work on this project. Here's going to be a team leader. Over here, another team leader. So this very hierarchical organization we've seen for decades, it's going to change in that instead of one person trying to run 13 different organizations or 13 different people, they're going to take 2 of those people and form a pod, and they're going to be able to lead their group. And then 2 other people lead their group. There's a lot more efficiency in that. And people tend not to work in silos that way because they have to rely on each other to get, quote, the job done. So we've done it. We've done it in the fast food business for companies. We did it for an NFL team. They built a new stadium and then it was chaos. And wait, whoa, everybody slow down. Let's set up teams in fast food. And here's how we're going to serve. And here's how we're going to interpret. We're not going to say they want security. We got a security team. And we break them into pods. So when you say, where's the restroom? Nobody points. They open their hand. The restroom's right this way, ma'am. They open their hand. They're gracious. So if you come up, they don't say, what do you want? They say, how may I serve you? That makes a big impact on people. And then we have a competition going between the different food stations to see who can do the greatest gross and who gets the highest marks with an app. And once you get the highest app, boom, they get a bonus. So it's like a competition. We're going to be better than you. Well, what is? We got a team leader at the hot dog stand, the hamburger stand, the Coca-Cola, the beer stand, and they're all trying to what? Elevate the experience, and everybody's excited, and then they get a reward.
Brilliant.
That's where we're going.
And that's where we need to go. I think it's really important. Yeah. Very good.
Well, this hierarchical idea, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not suggesting that we don't need a hierarchical. What I'm suggesting is we need to have team leaders that lead teams. And what will come from those team leaders are the rising, what I call them, the rising leaders that will eventually be able to move into the upper ranks of the organization to keep us on track and on culture. Here's the point. You can hire, people ask me all the time, who should we be hiring? Well, there's only 2 things you got to hire for, attitude and effort. That's it. And we worked with a fast food restaurant chain, and they just won the National Best Restaurant Award. And the COO said, Richard, so what's the one thing I look for? Well, then I got to make sure. I said, hire, attitude and effort. Never forget this. You can't train nice. So make sure they're nice people. And we'll get this right. And we did. They just won the National Fast Restaurant, Fast Casual Award in the United States, the best fast casual in the country. Why? Because they only hire people that what, have a good attitude, right? And they are nice. So, and they're willing to put in the effort. And now they're financing those people to open their own franchises.
There you go. And it's great. And having the right attitude is you can always work with people like that. And especially if they want to have effort, right? So it's really good.
Yeah. Well said, Dan.
It's been a real pleasure. We are talking to you today. If our listeners are wanting to get hold of you, where should they go?
They can go to, well, you can LinkedIn, literally everybody, a million people now, by the way. They should be happy there at Micro. You can go to Richard, W-E-Y-L-M-A-N, W-E-Y-L-M-A-N. Richard Weilman on LinkedIn, or you can go to my website, richardweilman.com, and you can go there, and my new book is on there, 100 Proven Ways to Acquire and Keep Clients for Life. There's also a resource center you can go. I put videos up all there's probably 30 videos. You can share at meetings with your staff and help them around the exam. It's all free. Just go and enjoy it. And if I can help you with coaching or consulting or speaking, please feel welcome to reach out. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Richard. It's been a real pleasure. So once again, thank you for joining me on today's session.
My pleasure.
Alrighty, there you go, listeners. Well, a lot for you to think about there, but it's about how you can brand yourself effectively and think about those four qualities of being the leader. The thing here is the key is for you to turn as to actually show up and show people the steps. But if you can stand in the gap, that's a great start and a great way to actually get some great re-engagement happening in your organization. Hey, it's always a pleasure catching up with you. Thanks for joining. Until next time, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Leadership is Changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsos. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change, inspiring executives and leaders to adapt and lead a bigger game in a fast-moving world.